Welcome to the Thriving in Chaos Project. Certified divorce coach and credentialed mediator Paulette Rigo invites you to grab a favorite beverage, find a cozy seat, soothe your soul, and take a listen. This podcast was created and inspired by our courageous journeys, love for connecting with others, and having meaningful conversations that teach, impact, and heal through sharing our stories. In each episode, Paulette will be joined by some of the most experienced and compelling experts in all things divorce and transformation. Listen to prepare and thrive through the toughest chapters as we reveal our hardships, celebrate our lessons learned, and see the future clearly with encouragement, hope, and joy. Leave feeling empowered and prepared to approach life and maintain our dignity no matter what. Each podcast episode focuses on sharing real conversations from real life situations. Isn't it time you thrived? Welcome to the Thriving in Chaos Project. I am your host, Paulette. I know most of you know who I am, but just in case you haven't been listening to me for the last 2 years, I am a registered mediator, a certified divorce coach, and founder of Better Divorce Academy. Today, I am ecstatic to welcome Tracy Galloway. She has been a litigator in child and family law since 1992, which is the year my daughter was born, and enjoys consulting with pro se litigants to help them navigate the divorce journey without paying huge retainers to attorneys. What a revelation, Tracy. In addition to running a thriving law practice, freeing clients from sourced, crippling marriages, that's a long conversation we're going to walk down, she's earned her master's degree in psychoanalysis, started competitive ballroom dancing. Boy, do we have stuff to talk about. And most recently began training as a certified coach in the faster way to fat loss. So where do we begin, Tracy?
I have no idea. We clearly, this is the first of many long conversations.
I couldn't agree more. So you are not a native of Massachusetts, but you now have a practice in Wrentham.
Yes.
Correct. As a family correct. Law attorney. I guess let's start with your journey. Were you the little girl that said, mommy, 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 I want to be an attorney?
No, I was not that girl. I was the girl who wanted to move back east to go to college because I'd never been to New York. I'd been born and raised in Los Angeles, California. But I wanted to experience the East Coast. So I came back east. I went to Vassar College in New York. After college, I went back to California for a while, but things didn't go so well then. I was working in film production.
Oh no.
My heart and soul belonged to the film industry, and had a brief stint trying some advertising. That didn't work for me. And then a dear friend suggested I consider going to law school because I had run out of other ideas, to be perfectly candid. And if I was going to go back to school, I wanted to come back east again. I had friends here. I had a relationship that I'd left behind that I wanted to see if I could revive. And so I moved back here. I actually moved in with my freshman year roommate from Vassar. She was living in Somerville, Massachusetts. And I've been here ever since. That was 1988. Oh my Lord. And I've lived here. I've lived in Massachusetts ever since. I visit my family in California often, but I've been an East Coaster much longer than I was ever on the West Coast. So I went to Northeastern Law School. And graduated there. And then I went to work pretty shortly after that. I went to work for the Department of Children and Families. I worked as an attorney representing the social workers for the state in child abuse and neglect cases. So that's how I got my beginning as an attorney. But even graduating from law school, I wasn't sure I wanted to be a lawyer. It was only after I'd been a litigator for a few years that I started to really enjoy what I could bring to the table and what I could accomplish. And I'm very happy I did.
So because you've been a family law attorney in that realm for now, 28 years, right?
Yes.
Seems like a lifetime to me. My daughter's 28, so I'm
it is in fact a lifetime. My oldest son is 27, and I was pregnant with him when I first started practicing. So it is a whole lifetime right there.
So yeah, so seeing that it has been that time, how have you seen the industry change? Because a conversation we had a little while ago was just about how when you get married, you really should know that you're not just going to be in bed with your spouse, but there's a third party involved.
Yes, I was telling you that I'm working on the first draft of a book I want to write called Marriage is a Three-Way. And it's my position that nobody who gets married fully understands, because nobody teaches them, state certainly doesn't teach you, that what you're doing is you're entering a contract that can only be broken with the approval of a judge. And every judge that's appointed everywhere is a human being. And you don't know that that person is going to be in charge of your life if you end up getting divorced. Mm-hmm. And that so many things about how you have to make decisions, if you're unfortunate enough to find yourself in the position of divorcing, so many things about your money and your children and your home and your life up until that moment of time and your whole future are potentially in the hands of a stranger. And it's a frightening and infuriating situation to find yourself in. And so my job as a litigator in this field in divorce is twofold. It's not only to navigate as a professional the rules and the process in the court system, but it's also to help my client to understand this insane position that they're in and the strategy that's necessary to weather it and to make good decisions along the way. So I have a lot of self-care. You know, I find myself being a therapist sometimes, even though I'm not licensed to be a therapist, but I find myself working as a team with my client because the process is, it's a marathon. It's a very difficult process. And people didn't know that that's what they were signing on for. So I'm hoping to start catching young people and helping them think beyond the fantasy of what marriage is and look at the financial and identity reality of what they're walking into.
Mm. Well, I could not agree more. If I had met you back when I was that young 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old woman back in the days when I was contemplating the fantasy of what marriage might look like and what it is I wanted out of a marriage, if I had known the things that you had just eloquently shared, I'm sure that I would have waited quite some more time.
Well, I wish I'd met me back then too, but I didn't know what I know now. And if I had, I might not have even listened. And that's the problem. It's not just catching somebody right at the moment that they're making decisions. It's something that, you know, I believe we ought to be teaching our teenagers, male and female, and all different identities, that the development of oneself does not require the mandate of partnering. And if one is going to partner, how do you make a decision about that? What do people need to know about a prospective spouse? What makes a good decision? I don't have answers to all those questions, but I have a lot of questions that I think that we should all be asking ourselves and helping our children and young adult children to be asking themselves much earlier than their 20s.
Yeah, so as an advocate and writing a book potentially about this topic as a whole, if we were to perhaps take a junior or senior in high school at that age where they're just about to start to think about graduating from high school, perhaps going on to higher education, embarking on relationships, do you think that there could be some sort of curriculum or course that they could take that would educate them about the laws and relationship and just what that would look like?
Oh, that sounds like a marvelous idea. Are you ready to come help me teach it? Let's put it together. That sounds like a great idea.
I would love to.
You know, yeah. I'll tell you something that I tell my clients because it's nice and concrete. And you may have some familiarity with this subject. When parties who are married want to, when somebody wants to file for divorce, wants to start a divorce process, one of the first and most important documents that that each party to a divorce needs to generate is called a financial statement. And it is a document that captures your income, your expenses, your assets, and your liabilities. And most of my clients, regardless of their age, have never done a financial accounting for themselves. They don't even know what they have or don't have, or what they owe or don't owe. And again, not specific to women. Sometimes men don't either. And so one of the fantasies I have, in fact, when I had somebody working for me, my assistant, one of the first things I asked her to do was to fill out a financial statement for herself. I think that it's a great exercise for anybody to do. And I think young adult men and women ought to know what they have, what they don't have, what they owe, what they make, and what they spend. So that's one element, one chapter in what I would see as a course on how do you take care of yourself before you offer and accept from somebody else their identity, their prospects, their station in life, not financial station, but their ambition for themselves. How do you make sure that you have the same values and that you want the same things? And I think it starts with knowing where you are before you even talk to the partner you're considering.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I work with a dating coach for some of my clients that are on the back end of divorce, where if they're, you know, ready for that, and some are and some aren't, and, you know, some are ready the day they, you know, file, some are ready 12.
Or before then, some are ready without telling anybody, and they get started on that when they're still in a little bit of a mess. It does happen. Yeah.
Why not just add to the mess, right? But, and some of them take 12 years or more, but, you know, yeah, it's like really getting clear, but you bring up a beautiful point about knowing what you need and versus knowing what you want, you know, and the financial part of it. But, you know, if you think back to that, those early years of thinking like, oh, well, the young woman's fantasy of, well, you know, he has to be tall, dark, and handsome, or, you know, look like so-and-so, and, you know, well, Brad Pitt's taken. Knowing what you really need in a partner is much more important than knowing what you think you want. It's, and the financial conversation isn't something that I grew up being comfortable having. And so many women, and I'm talking a very large percentage, we are just not taught as young women to be comfortable embarking on engaging in a authentic, genuine, mutual display of conversations about financial expectations. So you get married thinking, oh, how easy is it? You pick out the cake, the dress, you send out a few invitations, have a big party, sip champagne, and you're like, woohoo, this is great. But on the back end, if it doesn't work out for a myriad of millions of reasons, because those goals weren't matched up both financially, emotionally, mentally, psychologically, spiritually, you know, all of those reasons, man, it can get messy.
Yes. This is what happens when chemistry and kismet become they're so strong and they propel us into situations that they're just not going to hold up 5 years down the road. That's why they say it takes so much work. I like to say, I'm a married and divorced person as well. And I learned early on, and I like to say that marriage isn't a 50-50 proposition. It's an 80-80 proposition. Each side has to put in 80% of the 100%. I know that doesn't add up, and we're human beings, but that's really what happens, because if one person is having a hard time for any reason, the other person is doing pickup, and there has to be an understanding that that's going to be reciprocated. There has to be a fair amount. One side can't always be the burden and the other side the maker-upper. And I understand that, you know, humans have feelings and they think that they know what they're dealing with. But if we don't start to have more hard conversations sooner before we invite the state into our three-way, how are we going to be okay as individuals and be okay as a couple? And then when it doesn't work, when it fails, I'm not saying fails the first time, but fails the fifth time, and there's nowhere to go, but but to just undo what's been done, now you're dealing with forces that have nothing to do with either one of you, that you didn't even know were going to be shaping your life. It's too much to ask for anybody to come through that process intact. People do, and people move on, but it takes months and years to recover. This is why it can have such a huge impact on not only the parties, but of course, we're not even going to talk today about the children of divorce. I don't know whether you're one, I'm one, and certainly my children are children of divorce, and the impact is intergenerational. So. Mm.
No, I'm not a child of divorce, but I always wished my parents had been.
Well, there's that too, right? Right? You're a wannabe child of divorce.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that's, we're going to have a whole podcast on that topic. So I love the fact that you said, you know, 80-80. I had always heard and proclaimed that marriage is 100%, 100%.
There you go. I love that too. That's even better.
What's a joke? You know, divorce is 50-50, but marriage is 100-100. So yeah, I mean, 80-80 is good because there are days when you just don't have 100 to give and you need to have that give and take. So if it's 100-100 and the law, the state and all that is in there, it's 100-100-100. So
yes,
really, there's a lot of people in the bed and man, it's messy. So
it's so messy. And to not know, you know, some people are up for a challenge. And that's great. Yeah. I'm a go team. But the part of it is the informed consent part. That's the part that drives me crazy as an attorney. Yeah. I didn't know. And it's my bad. I'm not blaming anybody that I didn't know. I mean, I was an active attorney when I got married and I was an active attorney when I got divorced. I wasn't practicing divorce, but nonetheless, you'd think a lawyer would go look up the chapter, you know, the statute, look it up. No, I didn't. I thought I knew what it meant. That's what happens. People think they know because they have religious information. They've got their family role modeling and all of that is important, but it's not. At the end of the day, that doesn't tip the scales over what the truth is, which is if you get married, you got a license, you go in front of an authority of the state, you make a bond, the state is what has to take it apart. Mm. And that's sobering, isn't it, to think about that you walked in not knowing that piece?
Mm. Well, it's interesting because when you have surgery, can you think about the amount of goddamn paperwork that you have to fill out
before
they'll give you a root canal,
right?
Or you know, you get your eyelashes done, or what? I mean, something silly, but the oodles of paperwork that you have to fill out to just go have a physical. But no, you don't need to fill out shit to get married,
correct? So, or to have a baby, right? Or to have a baby. Have a baby outside of getting married or inside getting married. Nobody has to know anything about that either. And I get that that's biology. That's a little bit different, but the part where the state says you have to be licensed to get married, but we're not going to, even when you'll like this one too, even when DCF, Department of Children and Families, assumes custody of a child, they have to give you information. They have to hand you a pamphlet. Nobody hands you a pamphlet about what getting married means.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe they have them now at Boston City Hall. I don't know, but they didn't when I got married.
It might take people like you and I to start to tip the scales. We'll see. But a little bit of a segue.
Okay.
How does a family law attorney such as yourself fall in love with ballroom dancing?
Oh, well... this particular attorney, you know, I'm not without my relationship issues. And I sort of broke my own heart a couple of years ago. It was my fault, bad choice. We won't go there. But I happened to be helping a friend of mine out who's a financial advisor at a convention. And I was taking a walk around, and the one of the owners of a local ballroom dance studio Michelle and Adam Fox are the owners of the Fred Astaire Dance Studio located in Franklin, Massachusetts. They happen to have a table at this particular convention, and I caught Michelle Fox's eye, and she caught my eye, and I just walked over to say hello. And essentially what happened was she said to me, you know, you ought to come for your free lesson. I have the perfect teacher for you. And I took her up on it, and she did. And that began an unexpected, marvelous chapter in my life where ballroom dancing has not only helped me, it's not only a fun, hot, there's so much about it that I could talk about. That's another podcast. But it has been a physical and mental and emotional hobby and experience that has brought me much happiness, much joy, a lot of fun, a lot better fitness. Even though my original teacher departed and went on to better things for himself, I have another teacher now who's very detail oriented and fabulous. And I just learn so much and I have such a great time and great laughs that it's just taken on a whole part of my life. So thank you for asking, but it was as many things happen in all of our lives, sometimes you're just in the right place at the right time and you can't explain it, but it leads to a whole new pathway. So that's what happened 2 years ago, actually November. So it's been a little over 2 years.
I love it. Well, being a performing arts teacher for 20 years, I've had hundreds of students graduate, and several of them have gone on to becoming professional competitive ballroom dancers. And I need to introduce you to one of them. Her name is Leah Kalitri, although she's married now and she has a different last name, but Leah Kalitri, C-A-L.
I will look her up.
She is phenomenal, smart redhead, man, she is great. I'm going to have to connect you to. Hi,
Leah. Please, I would love it.
She is phenomenal and has quite a following and is in a phenomenal international teacher, and her husband and her compete together. So yes, I love it. Also, Neil Klein, I don't know where he is now, but he ran performing arts ballroom classes out of the studio for 10 or 15 years. So now I digress. Now, okay. Being a yoga teacher trainer myself and a yogi and a dancer and a little bit of a fitness wellness, I consider myself more of a wellness professional than a fitness one, because I'm really not a fitness lover in the sense of 9 more and 8 more and 7 more and 6 more. It's just like the dancer in me just zones out. I'd much rather. So I have been fascinated by what this acronym, I believe it's an acronym of the FASTER way to fat loss. Is it an acronym? What is it? Teach me. I want to learn.
Well, I actually I'm learning, and I don't know the answer. Just to give you the bottom line, I don't know the answer to that question, but I don't believe it is. I believe the reason that it is spelled and capitalized the way that it is, and just for our listeners, I will say it's capital F, capital A, capital S, capital T, and then little E and R, is because the founder of the Faster Way to Fat Loss, Amanda Tress, who's brilliant, both nutritionally and in terms of her exercise programs and her marketing of a genius science-based program of fitness. I think it's because one of the big components of the program is what's called intermittent fasting. And it's not fasting like you don't go without food for 72 hours. It's fasting, meaning if you take a chunk of your 24-hour period, be that 12 hours, 14 hours, or in her mind and in her program, 16 hours, and you don't consume, you don't feed during a larger proportion of the 24 hours, and you keep taking all of your calories in, all of your good nutrition in over an 8 or 10 or 12 hour window, you're giving your body a chance to heal. So it's a very important part of an entire program. I'm not an expert yet on it. I'm not certified as a coach at this time. I'm studying to become a coach, but I am a client of the Faster Way, and I have been since July, and I have been experiencing all of the benefits that the Faster Way offers. I've lost body fat, My body has changed. I'm more athletic. I'm pain-free. I feel lighter and happier. I've experienced mental health benefits as well as physical health benefits. And it's changed my life again on top of the ballroom dancing to the point where I am engaged in the curriculum right now and preparing to take the exam to become certified and to include being a coach as part of my entire, my wellness approach to even divorce law. I don't know how much crossover there will be. I'm not counting on that, but it is certainly a personal interest to extend my life and improve it. Now that I've put all this work into getting to this age, I want to make sure that I squeeze all the juice out of this life. So I want to be in good health and feel and be pain-free. Honestly, my mom is in assisted living and has spent a few months this year in rehab. And it's not a world that any of us want to be in prematurely or ever if we can avoid it. So it's really motivated me to prioritize my health and my care, my self-care. So,
well, I cannot think of a better collaboration or congruent message when you're going through divorce, or because it's grueling, it's exhausting, it's draining. Exactly. It affects every cell in your body. Your thoughts you think, the emotions you feel, physically your sleep, your ability to metabolize and digest food is affected.
Absolutely.
I could keep going. I don't want this to sound like a medical evaluation, but I cannot think of one client I have had or am embarking on new intake of where women are. Although I don't mean to sound like I don't love working with men. Men can typically also lose hair, become physically affected too.
They can become ill. They become ill also. Ill. They somatize more often than women do. Women are accused of being overly emotional. Men won't be as emotional. But it eats them from the inside out sometimes. And these are generalizations. They don't apply to everybody, but sure. I do represent men as well. And they suffer. They do.
They absolutely do. But going back to that analogy or comparison, right, of the journey of making a decision that, you know, something's wrong with this marriage. I don't quite know, can't put my finger on it, but you know, something just doesn't feel right. And it's a journey of, you know, maybe we could mediate, maybe we need to collaborate, arbitrate, litigate, all those different continuums. Every case is different, just like every marriage is. But because it doesn't take place overnight, it's a journey. It's a long road. It starts to wreck, you know, your health and yes. wreck, you know, havoc on all of the systems of your body, neurological, cardiovascular, reproductive, neurological, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everything in your body is affected. So the ability for you to have that additional knowledge or tool to give your clients to say, hey, so this is the legal aspect of it, but this is the wellness aspect of it.
Even before I started this particular program, I mean, this has just been since July. A friend of mine who was a client of the Faster Way, she became certified as a coach because she loves it. She wanted to bring the love to me. But even before that, between yoga teacher training in the past and between my experience in with psychoanalysis and obtaining my master's degree, I've always been interested in how is it that any individual takes the best care of themselves that they can so that they can bring their best selves to the problem of either working on a marriage or working on a divorce. How do you parent? How do you parent from the best, healthiest place? And it's taken me, you know, sort of from the outside in. I did the yoga, I did the psychoanalysis, but I hadn't really tackled my nutrition, including at times alcohol intake. I hadn't really tackled the benefits. I know you don't want to do the 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. The dancer in you doesn't like that. But the virtues, the true measurable benefits of strength-bearing exercise for women, for our muscles, for our hormones, for our bones, There's just tons of science-based research to say, yeah, actually picking up a hand weight is actually better for you than doing 2 hours of cardio. The cardio will take you down a never-ending road, but if you do 30 minutes involving a little bit of weight work, you're going to get much more bang for your buck. And at this age, I'm 55 years old. I'm keeping my eye out. I don't want osteoporosis. I don't want osteoarthritis. So, doing that for myself and then wrapping that into the message I've always given my clients, which is you have to be able to sleep. If you don't sleep, you're not going to be okay. So go see your doctor if you need help sleeping. Don't abuse alcohol. You know, stop doing that if you're doing that. You got to eat a good meal. You have to take care of the fundamentals of exercise, water, food, sleep, or you're not going to be able, you can't parent your kids and go through a divorce. You're not going to be who you want to be. So it's really fitting well with how I've always practiced law. And now the question of how that may shift in my life, I don't know. I don't care right now. I love both pieces of my life and I'm just going to keep putting one foot in front of the other.
It's still a moving piece of the puzzle, which is how we evolve as women, as entrepreneurs, as professionals. We never stop growing and changing.
Right. We don't want to. We're going to be dead. That's it. You're growing or dying. I want to be growing.
And one more thing that I truly find very synchronistic is our love for Rolf Gates.
We do. Yeah. And Mariam Gates. We're going to add that right in there. I owe her a lot too.
How has your study of yoga, not just asana, but more of the entire picture of yoga philosophy, and how has that affected your ability to practice and give your clients more targeted and better results?
That's a great question. I'll tell you how. One of the great things about Rolf Gates' evolution as a yoga teacher, from his days doing hot power vinyasa yoga in Boston to his retreats and his longer trainings, is that he's incorporated the basic fact of yoga, which is that it wasn't ever about the postures to begin with. It wasn't about the physical practice. The physical practice is really just a way to wear out your body so that you can sit and engage in the breathing and the meditation practices. And he came up with an ingenious way of teaching that so that even somebody who seems like they're over-caffeinated like me, my high energy, which is just the way I am, could learn to sit and breathe and slow down. I may not show it all the time, but I actually do practice it regularly. And that has helped. I can translate that for my clients into explaining and showing and demonstrating to them over time that unless a child is in the hospital, my former law partner and I used to say, if there's no blood on the floor, it's not an emergency. That things which stir up our system, it doesn't necessarily mean there's an emergency or that action is required. Engaging the parasympathetic part of your nervous system, calming down the sympathetic part of your nervous system, pays off pretty much every time. Calming yourself down and realizing, I know this is upsetting, but that's different from needing to react and inspire action in this particular moment. Let's breathe. Let's think about it. Let's talk about it. There's more time than it feels like there is. It has been an enduring lesson to me as a practitioner, and my ability to translate that and bring that to my clients and show them over time. You see, that wasn't really, look back at that. Hindsight is 2020. Wasn't really as much of an emergency as the other person wanted you to feel like it was it? You don't have to answer the phone. If they say, please get back to me right as soon as possible. You don't always have to. I don't have to as an attorney. The clients don't have to. They're not. So that promotes longevity. That means that you're not reacting in that stressed out adrenal overdrive place. Because when you're in that place, you're not in your prefrontal cortex. You're not in your brain. You're not in your mind. You're not making good decisions. So my job as a divorce litigator and attorney and counselor is to help my clients to slow down, just like it's my job to help me slow down. Again, I know it's hard to believe listening to me talk, But I really do. I spend time every day. I spend time outdoors. I spend time breathing. I slow down, beginning of the day, end of the day. And I love my life because of it. It makes my vitality more enjoyable to me, if not always everybody else. But that's how I've translated it. So Rolf was a huge blessing in my life. He helped me to know what I needed to know about ending my marriage. And he's been part of the foundation of my growth ever since. So thanks, Rolf, if you're listening. And Mariam, you too. You both are amazing, amazing and inspiring people.
I'll have to tag them on the podcast.
I
can still hear his voice in my head saying, and I'm going to bastardize. Imitation. He'll say, when you inhale, know that you're inhaling. When you exhale, know that you're exhaling. And so on and so forth. You know,
I just got goosebumps all over me. He's in my body too.
Of course, my voice went down about 3 octaves, right? So yeah, he's not, when you look at him, you think like, oh, he's not the guy you want to meet in a dark alley, but he is the biggest teddy bear. You just want to hug him and he's literally the best and lives out in Santa Cruz now, so.
Yes.
So yes, our parallels between dance and yoga and divorce and parenting, and it's really just, I feel like I've met my sister. So to all of you listening, if you need an attorney, I would suggest you get to know Tracy. I will put her information in the show notes. She is so well-spoken and incredibly experienced and such a delight, an inspiration to change the thinking that is so conventional in this world. And it's never too late. So all of you out there, keep thriving in that crazy chaos. I think I named this podcast right 2 years ago.
You sure did.
Thriving in the chaos. So
you had no idea how prophetic you would be, Paulette. And I'm so privileged to meet you. I'm so excited that I have a new friend. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone. Keep thriving in the chaos. I'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in. And make sure if you want to talk to us or ask us questions, you can always email us at thrivinginchaospodcast@gmail.com. See you next week.